Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness. Tonight, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you an exciting story packed with suspense and intrigue. Listen now to Prisoner of the Night. You know, friends, when you want to make a hit with the youngsters in your life, send Hallmark dolls. They're the newest kind of greeting cards, the gayest gift idea in years. You see, Hallmark dolls are favorite characters from the magic land of make-believe. They're dolls that all the youngsters love. So make a list of little folks you'd like to please, and then send them Hallmark dolls tomorrow. You'll be sending hours of happiness, and you'll get a glow of pleasure watching all the fun. You'll find, too, that youngsters love to collect them. And now, to preside over our program, here is your Hallmark host, Tom Shirley, just back from vacation.
Thank you, Professor Dell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, I promise you a chill up your spine, an honest-to-goodness chill you haven't known since you were a kid reading spook stories. Well, we have a mystery story for you that's one of the strangest that's ever been told. Psychologists and people who study the dark ways of the mind will know it's true. The rest of us must just marvel. The most important man in our story is, of course, the detective. You may have heard of him. Robert Ledroux, the world-famous detective of the French police force. He called this story the perfect crime. He should know. It was the only time in his long and great career that Robert Ledroux tracked a killer as brilliant as himself. Now here beside me to play the part of Robert Ledroux is that very talented actor Roger DeCoven. With him a cast of first-rate players. Outside, the fog is beginning to drift through the Paris streets. It's getting late, as the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you on the Reader's Digest radio edition, Prisoner of the Night.
Garçon. Garçon, a demi-tasse, madame. Then I will have the check, please.
You keep looking at your watch, Monsieur Ledroux. I hope I'm not boring you.
No, not at all. It is a great honor to have the company of an American writer here in Paris. I wish I could accept your invitation to dinner this evening.
Why don't you?
I have an appointment, madame. A very important appointment at 7 o'clock. And I dare not miss it.
Dare not?
Not unless I want to lose my life.
Your life? Why, good heavens, are you working on a murder case?
No, madame, I'm not with the Sûreté Police any longer, except in an advisory capacity. I have officially retired.
Well, then why should a retired detective be in danger of losing his life?
It's a long story, madame. I'm surprised you've not heard it.
But I'd like to hear it. That's why I came. The prefect of police told me you were one of the most brilliant men on the continent.
No, not brilliant. Patient, persevering, methodical, but not brilliant. And I possess that quality, I would not be obliged to keep my 7 o'clock appointment.
Won't you tell me your story?
If you wish. I do not have time for the details, but when I was a young man, the youngest member of the Sûreté Police, I was an ambitious youth and a bit of a braggart, too. No amount of work could dampen my insatiable desire for advancement in the world of solving crimes.
This is your big chance, Ledroux. Our first murder case. And probably the most difficult one you will ever have.
I will solve it, Monsieur le Prefect.
Do not be so cocksure. Three of our best men have already tried it and failed.
The failure of others is an inspiration to me, Monsieur. I will have it solved in 48 hours.
Indeed. You have a theory about this case?
Oui, Monsieur. I have a theory that no murderer is more intelligent than I am.
Very well, young man. You have 48 hours to prove it. I shall expect you in my office. the day after tomorrow. Come in. Ah, Mr. Little, you wish an extension of time on the Dubois case, huh?
No, monsieur. I wish you to order the arrest for the murder of his sister.
What is that? Auguste Dumont? He hasn't seen his sister for 10 years. He has never been inside her house.
I beg to differ with you, monsieur. He visited her on the night of the murder. And the fact that he smokes an unusual brand of cigarettes poses...
Cigarettes? No cigarettes were found in that house. Not even stubs.
Naturally, the murderer was clever enough to remove them. But the ashes were still there. On the rug, near the fireplace. On the big chair, near the window. And in the hall.
You found ashes?
Traces of them, monsieur. I also found a single strand of tobacco on a drinking glass near the console. You see, when I search a room, I cover every inch of it.
Every inch?
Why not? Everything has a meaning to me. Every pin, every bit of thread, every particle of dust. Without that strand of tobacco, I would never have discovered who the murderer was.
Oh, but you cannot convict a man on a strand of tobacco, Little.
The tobacco was merely a basis for my deductions, monsieur. After I knew who the murderer was, it was easy enough to find the flaws in his alibi. I have them listed right here in my report. Listed and checked.
Incredible.
Is there anything else, monsieur?
No, Little. Not just now. But you had better not leave the office. I will be wanting you on another case. Extraordinary, Little. Extraordinary. How on earth did you know the murderer was a heavy-set man weighing about 200 pounds, huh?
I examined the footprints, monsieur. The broad sole, the low arch, and the depth of the impression gave me a complete description of the man. I knew who the murderer was as soon as I met him.
Amazing. How'd you do it, Little? How'd you fit the pieces together so quickly? When do you find time to sleep?
Sleep? I do not waste my sleep the way other people do, monsieur. When I have a problem to solve, I go to bed and let my unconscious mind work on it while I rest. And when I wake up in the morning, voila, I have the murderer.
Incredible.
My record with the Sûreté is rather incredible, madame, if I may say so myself. All in all, I solved 22 murder cases. I never spent more than a week on any one of them.
And you say you're not brilliant, Monsieur Ledroux.
That's just it. I'm not. And I wasn't then. I built up an enormous reputation by making my work look spectacular. But it never was.
I don't understand.
I am a slow worker, madame. Slow, ponderous, and painfully thorough. But in order to make an impression on the prefect, I told him a pack of lies.
What?
I solved my cases all right, after a tremendous amount of work. But I always made it seem as if my deductions were miraculous. Instead of admitting that I had spent 5 hours trailing a suspect, I would report that I knew what he had done by reasoning it out.
And nobody knew what you were doing?
How could they? My reports were uncanny, but the facts were all there. Only the prefect never knew how many nights I stayed up to get them.
Then this story about solving murders in your sleep...
Pure fiction, madame. I hardly slept at all when I was on a case. Day after day, I worked completely around the clock. And the more brilliant I was, the more cases they put me on.
I don't see how you could stand it.
I couldn't, madame. The strain on my nerves began to show in time. And my health suffered considerably. I couldn't sleep at night, even when I wasn't working. And if I did get to bed early, I would wake up with horrible nightmares. For a long time, I postponed going to a doctor. But eventually, there was nothing else for me to do.
You cannot keep this up much longer, Ledroux. If you don't get some rest, you are going to have a nervous breakdown.
But I can't sleep.
Doctor, as soon as I put my head on the pillow, I start thinking about my work, dreaming about it all night long.
Always the same dream, always the same fear that you will not be able to solve your next case.
Always.
I do not understand you, monsieur. Why should you be worried about your work when you have such an admirable record?
That is just it, Doctor. My record can't last forever. Sooner or later, I'm bound to fail. And every time I finish a case, I have a terrible feeling that the next one will be my undoing.
Why?
Because someday I will be the murderer who is cleverer than I am.
Lutwul, you must stop work immediately. You must go away for a month at least and occupy your mind with anything but the solving of crime.
A month?
True, if necessary. Those are my orders, monsieur. I will make immediate arrangements for you to stay at a quiet hotel in La Havre. And if you do not leave Paris by tomorrow morning, I will refuse to accept you as a patient.
All right.
All right. I will go to Le Havre.
For at least a month's rest, Lutwul. And under no circumstances are you to consider working on another assignment.
I left for Le Havre that evening. And although my dreams pursued me, the new surroundings did me a world of good. In a week's time, I was feeling like myself again, and only at night did I have any difficulty getting the rest I so badly needed. But even that passed, and I began to sleep again. I remember how pleased I was to wake up one morning completely refreshed.
One moment, please.
Monsieur, Monsieur le Préfect, how nice to see you.
Well, I am delighted to see you, Ludo.
Well, you look so much better than you were.
Why not? I feel wonderful. This rest has been marvelous for me.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it. Now I don't feel so guilty about coming down here and asking you to do a little job for me.
Well, I am not allowed to work, monsieur. I'm under doctor's orders.
Of course, of course.
But the doctor does not have to know about this.
No, please. I'm not ready to accept another assignment yet. Not yet, monsieur. Not until I rid myself of this feeling that I was being...
Nonsense. You can't fail on a case like this, Ludwig. I wouldn't even bother you with it. Except that Monsieur Monet has influential friends. And it would not look right if I did not assign my best man to the case.
Monsieur Monet?
The banker. He was murdered last night on the beach at Saint-Adresse. Shot through the head. Just after he had left his hotel for a moonlight swim.
He was alone?
According to his wife, he was. She was waiting for him in the lobby of the hotel.
And no one heard the shot?
No. Must have been fired about 2 o'clock in the morning when nobody was around. And the hotel is quite a distance back from the beach.
Any clues?
Not yet. We're waiting for you, monsieur.
But I...
No buts about it. I'm asking you to do this as a personal favor. Now, don't argue with me.
Very well, monsieur, if you insist.
For heaven's sake, Ludwig, what's happened to your confidence? Where is that brilliant young man who solved the Dumont case for me in 48 hours?
He's right here, monsieur. For weeks now, he's been afraid he would disappoint you. But if the Dumont case was solved in 48 hours... This one will take only 24.
We will be back in just a moment with the second act of tonight's drama, presented by the makers of Hallmark greeting cards, from the pages of the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. Now let's eavesdrop on Peg and Grandpa and see what's going on.
I hear you went to a birthday party this afternoon, Peg. Have fun?
Oh, yes, Grandpa. We had banana ice cream and cake with pink frosting.
And were the candles all blown out at the very first puff?
Yes, but guess what else?
What?
Standing in front of everybody's place was a beautiful Hallmark doll. Oh, the table looked so lovely with all those pretty dolls. And besides, Mrs. Brown knew some surprises. Betty won a whole set for pinning the tail on the donkey.
Pretty nice favors, weren't they, Peg? And did the boys like them?
Oh, yes, Grandpa. He thinks it's swell. The boy's got Tommy Tupler and Little Boy Blue. Mm-hmm. And all the kids love the stories inside. And you know what?
Yeah, I'll bet you knew them all by heart.
Yes, I did. And you know what? I'm the first one to own a whole set of Hallmark dolls. Also, you and Mommy and Aunt Bess gave me one every week.
Yes, it's good fun. Good fortune for the youngsters when aunts, uncles, and everybody send a Hallmark doll once a week. But when Hallmark dolls pop out of an envelope, the pages of favorite storybooks come to life. So send Cinderella, Miss Muffet, Red Riding Hood, or any of the 8 Hallmark dolls to the youngsters you love. See that they get into the fun of collecting Hallmark dolls. Gay and colorful, Hallmark dolls wear rainbow bright plumes in their hats. They stand 8 inches tall. Each doll opens up and inside is a new version of an old familiar story that children delight in reading over and over. Folks, if you really want to make a youngster happy, you really want to light his eyes with anticipation, send that youngster a set of Hallmark dolls. 1 each week for 8 weeks. Only 25 cents each. See them soon. Send them often. Now back to Prisoner of the Night.
Better judgment, I took the assignment, madame. With Monsieur le Prefect, I went to the beach at Saint-Adres and made a preliminary investigation. It proved nothing. There was no sign of a struggle, and the murdered man was lying face down in the sand, his flannel robe draped callously over his shoulders. For a banker, he was not a very wealthy man. With the exception of Mrs. Monet, his wife, he had no heirs. Naturally, I questioned her.
I was, monsieur. I was very much in love with him.
How long were you married, madame?
12 years.
And you came here for a short vacation?
Oui, monsieur. André needed a rest. And so we went away without telling anybody where we had gone. Not even his business friends.
You mean nobody knew you were here?
Nobody but the people at the hotel. And I can't imagine why anybody there would want to kill him.
You're quite certain he had no enemies, madame?
None that I know of.
I see.
Is that all, monsieur?
Just one more point, if you please. At 2 o'clock this morning, when your husband left the hotel to go for a swim, you waited for him in the lobby?
Yes.
Did anyone see you there?
Why, yes. The clerk at the desk.
Thank you, madame. That will be all for the present. I saw Madame Monet waiting in the lobby from the time her husband left her until you both went out to call the police?
Oui, monsieur. She was sitting near the desk, so I saw her quite clearly.
Did anyone see you?
Oui, monsieur. The bell captain. That is correct, monsieur. The desk clerk and Madame Monet were both in the lobby from approximately 2:05 until after 3 o'clock.
No, monsieur. As coroner of this district, I can safely say that Monsieur Monet was killed between 2:15 and 2:30 this morning. Not 1 minute earlier or later.
Well, well. Are you out here on the beach again, Latrou?
Oui, monsieur. I'm combing the sand, searching, hoping, even praying that I will find a clue.
Good heavens. It isn't that bad, is it?
It is impossible, monsieur. I've reached the end of my wits.
Ah, now, don't say that, Latrou. I'll give you all the time you need to solve this case.
Time will not help me. I've checked and rechecked every possible suspect, and still there is no clue.
Ah, you will come up with something, all right. You always do.
Not this time, monsieur. This is the case I have dreaded since that first day I came into your office. It is the perfect crime.
There is no such thing, Latrou. And you know it.
I know I should never have taken this assignment. It will haunt me as long as...
Huh? Here.
What's this in the sand?
Well, it's a button, isn't it?
A button indeed, monsieur, from the sleeve of the witness, perhaps. Or better still, from the sleeve of the murderer.
Now you're talking, Latrou, the way you used to talk. That button might be the key to the whole case.
I would not be a bit surprised if it were. It hasn't been in the sand very long.
No, no such luck.
Why? What do you mean?
It is a false clue, monsieur. Look, the button has just fallen from your face.
I continued my search far into the night, just as I had always done. And just as I had always found some telltale bit of evidence, I ran across a footprint in the sand far back on the beach. The print had been made by someone in stocking feet. Someone who had deliberately removed his shoes to make no sound as he came toward the water from the grassy land behind. I followed those footprints back along a dirt road to a railroad siding. And as I crossed the tracks, I met a watchman making his rounds.
Who is there?
Me, monsieur. Police.
Oh. Are you looking for someone?
I'm looking for a murderer, watchman. Did you see anyone around here about this time last night?
Just the fellow that got on the train.
What fellow? What did he look like?
I could not tell you that, monsieur. It was too dark for me to see anything. But the derby hat he was wearing. But I know he got on the train.
Which one?
The only one which comes to here at this time of night. The mill train to Le Havre. Oh, you hear?
Huh?
He's coming now.
Good. I'll get on it. I've got to find that man in the derby hat. The conductor of the milk train was no help to me. He was a substitute man on this run, and he had not made the trip on the previous night. I went on to Le Havre, and with no idea where to find the man in the derby hat, I ran into a miraculous bit of good fortune. A hack driver had seen him hail a cab as he came out of the station. What is more, he knew the address this man had asked for. It was the hotel where I was staying. So I lost no time getting up there.
Clerk! Oh, clerk!
Oui, monsieur. Can I help you, monsieur Ledoux?
You can indeed. Do you remember if anyone checked into the hotel about this time last night, just before daybreak?
Last night, about this time? No, monsieur. No one registered until after the day man came on.
Are you sure?
Absolutely, monsieur. You may examine the records if you like.
No, no, never mind. He might have registered here the night before.
Who?
A man in a derby hat. Unfortunately, that is the only description I have of him.
A man in a derby hat?
Yes, he came here from the station just about this time last night. Do you remember seeing him?
No, monsieur. You're the only one who came in this late last night.
Me?
Oui, monsieur. And now that I think of it, you were wearing a derby hat.
Come in. Good morning, sir.
Ah, Monsieur Ledoux, come in, come in. You look as if you have found a new lead on the Monet case.
I have solved the Monet case, monsieur. All that remains is the arrest of the murderer.
Wonderful, wonderful, young man. It is less than 24 hours since I assigned you the case. You have made another one of your brilliant deductions, eh?
Oui, monsieur. As soon as I found the footprint in the sand, I was absolutely certain who the culprit was.
Good work, Lebrun. What have you there, huh?
A plaster model of this footprint, sir. It proves beyond any doubt that the murderer was at the scene of the crime in his stocking feet. And the fact that the first joint of his great toe is missing clearly establishes his identity.
Fine.
I have it all in the report, monsieur. The murder itself is without motive, without rhyme or reason. It was committed by a man who obviously suffers from some mental derangement.
Good heavens.
His mind wandered during the night, the way it always does. And I assure you, he has no recollection of the terrible crime he has committed. Because he is one man by day, and another by night. However, he must be apprehended at once.
Of course, Ledoux. But where can we find him?
Right here, monsieur. I'm turning the murderer over to you.
What is that?
I am the guilty one, sir. Arrest me for the murder of Monsieur Monet. It was all in my report, madame. The one really brilliant solution of a crime that might never have been solved if I had not solved it. And on the evidence I had uncovered, I was brought to trial.
Your Honor, As personal physician to the defendant, Robert Wu, I have brought to the attention of this court the testimony of three of Europe's most outstanding psychologists. I am in complete agreement with their diagnosis. Monsieur Wu is suffering from a strange mental illness which makes him subject to attacks of violence during his sleep at night. But in the daytime, he is just as sane as you or I.
Your Honor, as the prefect of the police sûreté, I would say there is no doubt that Monsieur Ledoux is guilty of murder. However, the punishment for this abnormal and fantastic crime must be made to fit the circumstances under which it was committed.
Your Honor, as attorney for the defense, I have but two requests to make before you pass sentence. One for wisdom and the other for mercy. Since Robert Ledoux is dangerous only when he sleeps, in the name of heaven, why must the waking man die?
Was a phenomenal case, madame. One of the most outstanding pleas in the history of French jurisprudence.
You were set free?
No, madame. I was convicted of murder and sentenced to life imprisonment.
But you're here, monsieur.
I am here until my appointment at 7 o'clock. You see, my sentence is suspended each day at 9 o'clock in the morning. From then until sunset, I am free to do as I please. But every night, at 7 o'clock, I must present myself for imprisonment until the following morning.
Good heavens. You're a prisoner at night and a free man during the day.
Oui, madame. And that is why I must leave you now. I must find myself a taxi at once and get back into jail.
For 51 years, Robert Ledoux served this strange sentence. It wasn't until 1939, just before the fall of France, that he was released from it at last. When the guards came to unlock his cell one morning, they found he had died during the night. Guess the solution? If you did, you're a better detective than I am, even than Robert Ledoux himself. Thanks to Roger de Coven for his fine portrayal of the French detective, and thanks to the cast for a great performance. If the story haunts you, I'll remind you of a little piece I read in the Reader's Digest the other evening by no less an authority than Socrates. He said, "If all our misfortunes were laid in one heap, from which everyone took an equal portion, most people would be contented to take their own and depart."
You know, friends, you'll find birthday parties twice the fun when you give youngsters Hallmark dolls. You can use them for table decorations, favors, prizes, for party games. You can save yourself hours of shopping time and buy a whole set for the gayest birthday gift imaginable. Children love to get them, delight in collecting them. So get something youngsters really love. Get Hallmark dolls. They're only 25 cents. Buy Hallmark dolls where you buy your Hallmark cards.
This is Tom Shirley inviting you to be with us again next week. At that time, you will hear a charming and delightful story called I Remember the Franzens. All of you will remember the Franzens when you hear their heartwarming story. It's about an actor and an actress who retire from the stage to a country farm, and while there, strangely enough, play the greatest role in their career. So be with us next week for another fine dramatic program presented by the makers of Hallmark greeting cards.
the Night was dramatized by Robert Sloan from John Nesbitt's story in the Reader's Digest, America's favorite magazine. The Hallmark program was directed by Mark Sloan, with music especially composed by Jack Miller. To be doubly sure of the finest quality, always look on the back of your cards for those three identifying words, a Hallmark card. This is Fred Utell speaking for the makers of Hallmark greeting cards. Buy Hallmark dolls where you buy Hallmark cards. Remember, a Hallmark card will best express your perfect taste, your thoughtfulness. Marshall and the Man Called X, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.
We hope that you've enjoyed this recording, and for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.